Okay, our next speaker is Richard Eve, who will share about 40, 45 minutes. Welcome, Richard. Come on, Richard.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name's Richard, and I'm a grateful recovered addict. And I don't say that from a place of ego or arrogance, that's just how it is today. I've recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Not only have I recovered, but my friends, family, acquaintances, and everybody that was around me has recovered from a hopeless state of Richard. I'm not an addict who come here to get my life back. I just simply didn't have one. It stripped me of everything worthwhile in life. So if you come here with a job, girlfriend, car, kids, family, you're all welcome. You know, the only requirement here is a desire to stop. So you don't have to have done the things that I've done. You don't have to have used like I used. You don't have to have had the same consequences I did. Usually at some point in my share, what I say is this, right? If you want to know how recovered I am, don't ask me, I'm a liar. Ask my girlfriend, right? I'm not going to say that today because I forgot it was our anniversary yesterday. And she will annihilate me if you ask her what I'm like. So I ain't going to be saying that today, okay? I come to Cocaine Anonymous absolutely broken. First off, and I'm not here to say other fellowships, I went to an AA meeting and I stood outside this meeting and this woman came out to me and she said, "You're right, love." I went, "Not really, no, I'm sticking needles in myself. I'm smoking crack cocaine on my 120ml methadone, diazepam, sipping milanzapine, Prozac. I've got the old bill chasing me. I can't stop sticking needles in myself." And she said, "Well, at least you haven't had a drink, love." I thought, I'm in the wrong place here. Do you know what, right? What I've learned about Cocaine Anonymous is this, and what I've learned about standing here and doing this. It's very easy that you stand up here and talk about a spiritual program of action, but this is about what I do out there and the people around me, not about what I do here. One of the greatest bits of information I was given here was about watch what people do, not what they say. Because it's easy for me to stand up here all spiritual. And I'll give you an example of that. I'm sitting in a meeting one day, right? There's this geezer, he's about 37 years sober. He very rarely says anything. It's one of those meetings where you've got to raise your hands. He never speaks. And all of a sudden, at the back of the meeting, he put his hand up, and everyone looked at him. And he went, "Hello, Tom, recovered alcoholic. Did you know that I is in the word illness, and we is in the word well? Thank you very much." And everyone went, "Wow!" So I'm in a meeting the next day, right, and some bird goes, "June, alcoholic, did you know that I is in the word illness, and we is in the word well?" And I went, "Wow, June!" Because it's very simple to stand up here and repeat what you heard in a meeting yesterday. Now, I can be accused of that because I did that in meetings for a long time. What I actually did was this. As it went round the room, I repeated like a parrot, "My name's Richard and I'm an addict." I had no understanding about what the word addict meant. I just said it because she said it, he said it and he said it. No understanding of that. What I'm going to do is I'm going to do what Dr. Bob said, who's one of the founders of our 12-step fellowship, and I'm going to keep it simple. I was sponsored into a line of sponsorship that goes up to 47 years worth of sobriety. So this wasn't given to me by people that were 3 years, 2 years, or 6 years down the line, or 8 years down the line. This comes from people that are 47 years and still here today. And I was given a simple program of action, and I've kept it simple from day dot. So the book talks about, describe what it was like in a general way, what it's like now, and what it's like now. So I'm 14 years old, I'm indoors, I'm bunking off school, got my school blazer on. And there's this bottle of scotch in the cabinet, and I can hear it. It's going, "Drink me, drink me." So I've gone into the cabinet, got this bottle of scotch out, gone like that, and it was horrible. My throat was burning, my head was spinning, my stomach was on fire, and I thought, I'm never touching that shit again, ever. And then, bam, it happened. I come from a house where there was loads of material stuff going on. There just weren't much love going on. Now, this bottle of scotch put its arms around me, and it kissed me on the head, and it went, "It's going to be all right." That's what it did for me. So I'm back into the cupboard. I've now got my face screwed up, my hand over my nose. I'm drinking this bottle of scotch. 3/4 of a bottle later, I've decided that it's a really good idea to take my dad's 3-litre Granada on the driveway down at the schools to pick my mates up. So I've got 3 cushions. I can't see over the steering wheel, and I'm doing that down the road, pissed out of me nut. And I get down to school, all my pals jump into the motor. We've all got the windows down, music full blast, going like that up the high street. And as I get to the top of my road, the old bill behind me with a light going. So I mounted the pavement outside my house, hit the brake, all my pals went forward in the car. Now, they would have stuck through thick and thin with me, my pals. They jumped out of the car and went, "See ya." Just legged it across the road. So the copper come up to the car and he opened the door and I fell out the door. I got my leg caught round his seatbelt and he picked me up in my school blazer. He said, "Is this your car, sir?" I says, "Yeah." He said, "And what's your name?" So I give him my dad's name. He said, "And what's your date of birth?" I said, "The 7th of the 7th, 1936. He said, "It makes you fucking 64. I said, "I know it does." He said, "Get in the back of the fucking car." I didn't know it then. But that was going to be the pattern to my drinking and using for the rest of my life. I can explain my drinking and using like this. I went to a party in 1981. It ended in 2008, and it was a shit party. Right? I was the sort of geezer that would go to a party and people would come up to me and say, "Richard Cab's here," and I'd say, "I didn't order one." They said, "No, we did." Fuck off. Seriously, go away, mate. You're driving us nuts. What happened with me was this. I just ended up in a spiral of trouble down to the drinking and the drugs. As the drinking and the using got heavier and heavier, the prison sentences started. They got longer. The time in between them got shorter, and they got longer and longer and longer. In the end, I'm in a flat in Peckham. There's holes in the ceiling, water dripping through, cans of Tennent's everywhere, crack pipes, needles everywhere. There's a geezer sitting opposite me. I think his nickname was Doped Up Dave. Not you, Dave, but another geezer. And he was sitting there, and he had a tourniquet around his arm, a needle hanging out of his arm. He had a can of Tennent's in one hand. He had both his eyes shut, and he was dribbling out the corner of his mouth. And he opened one eye, and he looked at me, and he went, "Richard, you're fucked, man." What our book talks about is I could no longer distinguish between the true and the false. My addict life had become the only normal one. You see, I could see my reality. What I couldn't see was his reality. The problem here is I'm delusional. And when I came out, I learned that. I'm delusional, right? When I walked into Cocaine Anonymous, this beautiful-looking woman came up to me, right? Stunning. And she went, "Can I take you home and shag you tonight?" That's what I heard her say, right? What she actually said was, "Are you new? Would you like a cup of tea?" But I'm delusional. My drinking and my using took me to a place where I end up with a massive prison sentence. Now, at this point, my illness pops up and manifests itself in my ego. And what I want to do is tell you about bank robberies, security call vans, everybody hit the fucking floor, everybody move, right? That ain't the truth. That ain't the truth. I was robbing women's handbags. I was stealing off my family, my friends, my acquaintances. I was stealing, nicking for people at cash points. I was jumping over counters with ball pain hammer, smashing people over the head to get money out of the tills, foaming at the mouth. It ain't glamorous. It ain't glamorous for me. I'm not somebody who ran out of money and sat indoors and went, "I won't use today." That's just not me. You know, I will go down to Boots and nick as many razor blades as I can and have a chase up with a security guard in order to go and score. So I end up on the street with a gun, and like I said, it ain't glamorous here. And end up with a massive prison sentence. So I've been away about 3 years, and all of a sudden there was a knock at the cell, and I gave him my normal prison welcome. "What do you fucking want?" He said, "They're brewing new chap down the church." So I flew down the church, right, with him. I said, "Who's the geezer brewing the urge?" Now they're all sitting in a circle, right, and I went, "Who is it?" He went, "It's him over there." I went, "All right, mate." He went, "All right, mate. Welcome to the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting at Coldy Prison. My name's John and I'm an alcoholic." And I turned to my pal and I said, "What the fuck have you brought me here for?" And I swear the mariachi band was going to be coming in. We're all rattling their things. Praise Jesus, because I saw there was 12 God steps, 12 God traditions. I just thought, get me the fuck out of here. Get me out of here. The day I was released from prison, I swore blind that I would never touch another drink or drug again. And if you'd have put a lie detector on me, it would have come back saying I was telling the truth and I meant it. Absolutely. I'm released at 7 o'clock. I'm pissed by 9 o'clock. I'm in a crack house by 12 o'clock. I've got a needle hanging out of me by 2 o'clock. One day to go right back to where I just left off. Because I don't go back to that first drop of scotch I had when I was a kid. I go back to what does it for me. And for me, it is crack cocaine, heroin, and Tennent Super. Usually all together. My drug of choice was usually more of whatever you've got. And then I'm going to go home and do my bit. That's how I use. 3 months of being on the street doing what I've always done, robbing, stealing, lying and cheating, I decided to go to one of these meetings. So I go into this meeting, And they said, easy does it. Which obviously meant do fuck all. They said, think. I swear they said drink. They said, don't get involved in a relationship in the first year, so I got a girl pregnant. They said, get a sponsor who's got what you want, so I got one who was 8 years clean and didn't do fuck all. Because that's what I wanted, to be 8 years clean and do nothing. And I went back out and I did what I've always done. Robbed, stolen, lied, cheated. This time I end up in another prison that's in my front room. I've got a crack pipe in front of me, I've got a bag of gear in front of me, I've got a bottle of Bacardi in front of me, and I've got a 6-inch carving knife and I just want to die. By this point I've had 2 heart attacks, I've had a stroke, my eyes dropped, my lips dropped, my whole left side is gone. And as I look back now, I can see that something inside me died that day. And I like to call it my soul died, because there was nothing left. Absolutely, there was no friends, there was no acquaintances, there was no family, it was just me. 18, 20 hours a day on my own. You know, when I came here, like I said, I was delusional. You see, in my mind, I'm a bit of a gangster, right? And an international playboy, by the way. So I end up walking around bus stops picking fag butts up. Right, that's how much of a gangster I am. And as for the international playboy, I went out with a bird in Orpington once. Right? Well, I'm absolutely delusional. Nuts. I was in a meeting, right? A woman had to only get up and get a cup of tea, right? And I'd already worked out how many kids we were having, when we're going to get married, and where we're going to be living for the next 25 years. She's definitely going to ask me out, her. I'm like that at the time. Right? She fucking fancies me, I'm telling you. You're fucking on me. I know the word what the chair said, right? I'm just too busy thinking about what she's saying to me. She ain't had to go like that, and I swear she went like that. So as I say, my soul died that day. Now, I'd known for a long time that I'd been using against my will. But they say the longest journey you can take in is from the head to the heart. Now, I'd sat in these meetings for a long time saying I'm done. But it was coming from there, it weren't coming from here. I didn't know that. When people kept saying to me, what's different this time? Well, I'm done. Really? Was I? This day I knew it. In here. I absolutely knew I was done for good and all. Not one day at a time. I'm done for good and all. See, when I first come to meetings, what people said to me was this. It's one day at a time. And I said, no, but you're lying to me. It's not one day at a time, is it? You're saying I can never drink and use again. And they go, no, but it's one day at a time. I say, no, it's not. You're saying I can never do it again. This time I came in and an old timer went to me, one day at a time. I said, I fucking hope not. I hope not. I hope I'm done for the rest of my life for good and all. This is how delusional I am, right? I'm sitting on the couch with a carving knife and I've already worked out I'm going that way. I ain't going that way, right? It's not a cry for help. I'm out of here, right? And as I'm about to top myself, it's coming to my head. Coppers breaking in and them saying, what a shithole this is. So I thought I'd better go around and tidy the flat up, right? So I've gone round for an hour tidying the flat up, come back with my knife, and I'm about to top myself, and all of a sudden it's popped into my head, 2 coppers, right, standing over me. I'm dead on the couch, right? I'm afraid he's dead, Sarge. I can see that, Constable, but look how tidy his flat is. I was telling the sponsee a little while ago, right, and I said, obviously, because I'm delusional, right, and the delusions of grandeur. So I've died, obviously. They've got me in a coffin going down the mall with a British flag draped over me. They've got the 21-gun salute either side of me, Army and Navy. And he went to me, why, was you in the Army? I went, no, I was fucking mental, mate. Army? How I credit on that phone that day, only God knows. Only God knows. And I picked the phone up and I rang someone. I said, I am smashed to pieces here. I'm 7½ stone. I'm jaundiced yellow. I've had 2 heart attacks, a stroke. And I know that I am dying. There ain't no ifs and buts about it. I am dying. And I'm going to die. Please help me. He said, there's a meeting about 2 miles away from you tonight in about 2 hours. You need to get there. I had no money. All I had was a bit of willingness. And I had to drag myself to this meeting. No buses. 2 hours it took me to walk nearly 2 miles or drag myself to this meeting. And from that day to this, I've thrown myself into this program, hook, line and sinker. I've gone about this program the same way as I go about getting drugs. Right? Strenuously thrown myself into it. Absolutely. I was telling a sponsor a little while ago, right? I rung him up and I said, how you doing? He said, oh, mate. He said, my kidneys are shutting down. Got thrombosis in my legs. My wife's left me. They're repossessing the house. The kids are gone. I can't stop drinking scotch. I'm sticking 13 grams of coke up my nose. All my money's gone. I said, look, I'm going down to Brighton tonight to do a chair for a mate of mine. Why don't you come with me? He said, do you know how far Brighton is? It's called denial. The geezer still don't know after all that he's dying. Still don't know. So I vigorously threw myself into these meetings. And I go to this meeting, and there's this geezer, and he's sharing his experience, strength and hope. Now, he's nothing like me. He's never done crack. He's never done heroin. He's never been to prison. Still had a car. Still had a house. Still had a wife. Still had a kids. Still had a job and a career. And he managed to hold that all together while he was drinking. And my head goes, separation, separation, separation. Nothing like me. None of you as bad as me. But then he talked about terror, frustration, bewilderment, and the despair of where his drinking took him to. And I knew what he was talking about because I'd felt it on the couch that day. Absolutely felt it. And then he went on to talk about being happy, joyous, and free. Rocketed into a fourth dimension, and I used to cringe when I heard that. Oh, did he say that in a meeting? Oh, my. And I used to feel sorry for him. Bless him. Oh, bless him. So I'd go into a meeting, right, and people say to me, see the geezer with a big book? He's one of them joy boys. One of them step Nazis. Right? Stay away from him. Fucking mental. So I'd go to newcomers, see the geezer with a big book, stay away from him. He's fucking mental. And I'd go out, start smoking crack, smash myself to pieces, and I come back and this bastard was still sitting there like this. And I say to newcomers, stay away from him, he's mental. And I go out and I smash myself to pieces again. And I come back in and I thought, you know what, maybe I need to ask somebody like him, because he's still sitting here. He's still happy, he's still joyous, he's still rocketing in the fourth dimension. Whatever. And I followed him to his home group. Now, I've been in here a while by then, right? So I know people can stand here and talk a good program. I know that, and I've explained that to you already. So I'll get to his home group, right? And he's standing there with his phone out, taking newcomers' numbers. I thought, that's a blag. Make yourself look good in front of the rest of the group. Oh, yeah. So I grabbed this newcomer. I said, does he ring you? He said, ring me. He drives me fucking crazy. He drives us all mad. And then I just found out he'd been to West Middlesex Hospital on a 12-step call to pick somebody up from the hospital to bring them to the meeting. And inside the meeting was his sponsor, up to 47 years. All dressed becomingly, all putting the chairs out, all making tea, all helping clearing up, and all welcoming newcomers coming in the meeting. And I thought, I want some of this. I truly want some of this. I could see the spark in their eyes. I want some of this. And I said to this geezer, will you sponsor me? Now, if you're new or you're struggling and been around a little while, do not be afraid to ask someone to sponsor you. It is an absolute honour and a privilege for us to do this for you. In fact, I need you more than you need me. That's the truth here. Absolute honour and a privilege to do it. I was sponsoring about 25, 30 people at one point. I said to my sponsor, when do I say no? And he said, when it hurts. Right? It's never hurt. I'm not a counsellor. I'm not a relationship counsellor. I'm not a marriage guidance. And I'm certainly not a financier. Right? My choices in life when I came here was beans on mouldy toast or eggs on mouldy toast. So please don't ask me about what you're going to do with that yacht in Monaco, because I don't know. He said, I will sponsor you. Are you willing to go to any lengths? I said, I will run around Kingston naked with a red dicky bow on if it's going to keep me clean. Please don't ask me to do that. Please. But I will if you want me to. He said, I'm going to give you a programme of action because this is a programme of action. It's not a programme of thinking, Richard. Now, here's what thinking done for me, right? So I'm indoors with a kebab in that hand, can of Tennessee in that one, and on the TV it come up, right, geezer with a six-pack. I thought, yeah, get myself one of them, right? Get a nice-looking burp of the summer, sort myself right out, right? 2 weeks later, I got a can of Tennessee in that one, and a kebab in that one, and I can't work out how come I ain't got a six-pack. Right? What's going on now? And that's what my sponsor explained to me. About thinking. Thinking just brings more thinking. Action brings about change, and you need to put some action in you. So what I want you to do is get on your knees every morning and invite God into your life. I went, whoa, 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 whoa. Did you just say God? He said, yeah. Have you had God in your life every day so far? And I went, no. And he went, how's it fucking going? I said, it's going pretty shit. He said, well, you need one then. if you don't believe in God, do you believe I believe in God? I said, I believe you believe, yeah. He said, okay, ask Billy's God to keep you clean and sober then. I said, I can do that. My first morning doing that, I went round the house, I shut the curtains, looked under the bed, checking in when my mates were there. Right, looked in the cupboard. Right? Because I'm embarrassed to get on my knees and invite a power into my life, but I'm not embarrassed to jump over an off-licence counter and smack you over the head with an hammer to get money out your till. But I'm embarrassed to get on my knees. Delusional. Delusional. So he said, I want you to write 10 things down every day that you're grateful for. And I went, are you fucking joking? Turn it out. What the fuck am I grateful for? I swear to God, that's true. I swear to God. He said, let me tell you this, why a grateful addict will never pick up. Ever. Period. This is an illness of more. More, 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 more. I want more, I want more, I want more. Discontentment is about I want more. This is about gratitude. What have I got now? He said, I want you to write 10 things down every day that you're grateful for. I said, I am grateful for. Fuck all. He said, well, why don't you start writing things down that you should be grateful for? Did you know that some third world countries have to walk 3 miles in the morning to go and get a bucket of stagnant water? And you, your selfish prick, get it out the tap. I said, selfish? It's a bit much, isn't it? Come to find out later on, that's exactly what I am, selfish and self-centred to the core. Did you know that 13% of the world's population tonight are going to go without food in their stomach, without a roof over their head, sleeping in mud huts with no electricity, no running water, and you've got all of that? So let's start writing down the things that you should be grateful for. I said, okay, I can do that. I can do that. And here's the thing about gratitude, this, right? Gratitude is not about thinking, it's about action. Right? And people don't like this when I say this, and I'm not here to slaughter anybody, but this is the truth for me. When you ask somebody who's been around here a little while why they're grateful, this is what they do. Who don't write a gratitude list, by the way? Yeah, I've got a job. Clean. Got a partner. Got some kids. You write, speak to somebody who's been around here a few years and done this, and speak to them and ask them why they're grateful, right? And this is what they'll do. We write a gratitude list. I've got hope, freedom, options, peace of mind, health, family, friends, a sponsor, a big book, meetings to go to. I've got a roof over my head, electric, running water. I know why I'm grateful. There ain't no thinking I'm grateful. I know it because I do it every single morning. I know why I'm grateful. And that is what cures this illness, gratitude, because it keeps me reminding me about where I come from. I used to use in stairwells, sticking needles in myself. It wasn't glamorous. Then all of a sudden I can come here, get a job, get a few things in my life and start getting ungrateful for what I've got. No, I need to remember where I was. I'm not somebody who comes to meetings to be reminded of what it's like. I don't. You know why? Because I was told ring 2 newcomers every day. Every day. I want you to go into a meeting with you. I want to put your hand out and I want you to say, are you new? I said, I can't do that. He said, why not? I said, I'm shy. He said, you weren't shy meeting some fucking geezer at a phone box for 4 hours on a bike that you didn't know, was you? I went, no. He said, you weren't worried about going into some pub and asking the barman who you didn't know for a drink, was you? I went, no. He said, well, do this then. I said, okay. I didn't know what he was doing. I didn't know about the selfishness and self-centeredness and self-seeking. I didn't know about any of that stuff. He could have explained it to me, but it would have just gone over my head. What he done was give me the action to take, and what that did was it got me out of self, because every time I've come here, it's been the same. Turn up late, eat your biscuits, drink your tea, chat your birds up, and fuck off early. Take, 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 take. That's all I've ever done, because I've got an illness of more, give me, take. What he was doing was taking me out of that self-centered place and making it about you, rather than me. And in the giving, guess what? You receive. You receive. So as I said, I'm not somebody who comes here to be reminded of what it's like, because I do that every morning. I dare anybody to speak to somebody this morning whose kids have just left them, their wife's just left them, their business has gone down the pan, they can't stop drinking, they can't stop sniffing coke, and they're sticking needles in themselves. And I dare any of you to get off the phone and not be grateful that that ain't you. Absolutely grateful. So I just did what he said. Now this is what he said to me about the steps, right? It's Tuesday. I'm going to be around your house Sunday, and we're going to start the steps in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I came around my house, we did the preface, the forward, doctor's opinion, Bill's story, there is a solution, more about alcoholism, step 1. There was no handouts, no writing, it was all in there. We did agnostics, then went through how it works. And this is what he said to me about step four. You've got 1 week to do it, and if you don't do it, fuck off. Because I ain't going to watch you die. Now, I heard it takes 18 months to do step four. At least, apparently. I was a bit put out by it, to say the least. So this is how I approached my step four. Monday night, I sat down at 5 o'clock, and I put 4 hours aside from 4 till 9. And I did that Tuesday, and I did it Wednesday. It was done within 3 days. 4 hours, 4 hours, and 4 hours. He was back around my house on the Thursday. And we did 5, 6, 7, 8. And this is what we did with 8. And I know it's not in the book, and it's the only time I divert from this book. And I'll explain why. I was told to write out 3 columns of the people that I'd hurt. Person that I'd hurt, the harm that I did, and to walk a mile in their shoes. You see, because I can come here, right, and I can tell you this, right, I put my mum and dad through hell. I did. Bit of a statement, isn't it? Put them through hell. But what I actually had to do was put myself in their position and write a letter to me about what I'd done, and this is what came out of it. You stole for our peace of mind from us. You stole our relationship with our son. We had to travel halfway up and down the country every bloody week to another prison to be patted down by screws to look at you shaking and shivering and 7½ stoned. We were full of guilt, remorse and shame for what you'd put us through. We had to hide our keys at night. We had to hide our purses. We had to hide our wallets every time you come anywhere near us. Every time there was a family do, we had to tell them you'd fucking emigrated again. True that. I did. I've been to Australia about 30 times, apparently. Never actually been there, obviously. Wanza from Pentonville, usually it was. But what that did was, out of all the steps I did, that was the most powerful one I did. Because that was the first time in my life I'd seen the damage, not from my side, but from your side. And it absolutely changed my perception of my behaviour, because that is what this is about. Behaviour. This is not about drinking drugs. Not about that at all. I thought it was. I thought it was. Not that. That's not the truth. So I went out and made a few amends. 10, 11 and 12, bam, within 30 days I'm out working with others, and I have not been out this book in the last 6 years. And on January the 11th, by the grace of God, I'm 6 years clean and sober. Right? That's got nothing to do with me. Nothing to do with me. But I'm aware of this, right? I have a God in my life, a God of my own understanding, and I choose to call it the word God. Full stop. God will do for me what I cannot do for myself. But let me tell you this, God ain't going to go to meetings for me. God ain't going to sponsor people for me. He's not going to take the 12 step for me. He's not going to write a gratitude list for me. And he's not going to take newcomers numbers for me. He's not going to take inventory for me. Right? And he ain't going to remove them character defects if I keep going out and acting on them. I have a part here. I have a massive part here. What got me here was the combination of drink, drugs and a God-given surrender. What keeps me here is me and that God-given surrender that I was given. I have to have a part in this. I have to keep putting the action in. I can't think. I'm not somebody who can come here and sit in meetings and do nothing. I haven't got an illness like that. My illness does not have a day off, never has done. Never wakes up on a lovely sunny day and goes, do you know what, Richard? I'm going to leave you alone today. It's a lovely sunny day. My illness don't do that, so I don't take a day off. Ever. I don't. So for those of you who don't understand, I'm going to talk about the illness of alcoholism and addiction, right? So I'm 6 weeks in. I'm sitting in a meeting. Ain't done them steps. That's for you lot. Right? You need them, not me. Ain't really got a sponsor. Although I do ring this geezer every now and again. He's been around a little while. Because somehow I'm going to get it from him by osmosis. Everything's great. Stop using. Right, off the methadone now. Stop fitting off the benzos. Right, put a bit of weight on. She's on me. Right. And her as well. Right, I've had a right touch here. Okay. And she's married. Get on that. Got a job. Got a few quid in my pocket. Got a new car. Just check my ride out. Everything should be great. Right, great. And all of a sudden, 6 weeks in the meeting, this is what happens. She says about that plumber one more time, I'm going to fucking knock her out. I swear to God. I'm timing how long he shares, because he goes on forever, this geezer. 5 minutes now, he's been sharing for. I'm irritable, I'm restless, and I'm discontent. I'm ungrateful, bored, and pissed off. And I don't want to be sitting there anymore. I'm putting everybody in the world to rights. I'm judging everybody in the meeting. And there's just something wrong with me, and I don't know what it is. I just can't put my finger on it, because I should be all right. I've got all that external stuff back. I should be all right. But this is not about external stuff. This is about an internal condition. And, of course, what fixes that internal condition, because we're an altruistic program, is looking out to help you. That's what fixes this. Anybody know what the biggest chapter in that book is? Funny enough, it ain't about God. It's about working with others. When it says when all else fails, praying, God, work with others. That's what this is about. Continuous work with others. You see, because how can I ever forget where I come from when I'm working with you? Ever. And what it talks about in our big book is simply this. It's something you would not want to miss. Would not want to miss. It is absolutely amazing to watch the lights come on in somebody's eyes who was broken and dead. Now, I know that I haven't got a part in that other than this, right? Because any more than that, and it's my ego returning. I am a road sign saying, go that way. And that's all I am. I ain't God. I'm just a road sign saying, go that way. And if you go that way, great. And if you don't, you don't. Not my responsibility. As I said, I was sponsored in a line of sponsorship that comes with a lot of sobriety in it. I was told to turn up at meetings, and I was told to dress becoming. And if you're ever doing a chair, you will wear a shirt, Richard. Whoa, hold on. Shirt? Fuck's that got to do with anything? He said, I'll tell you what, right? You find a picture of Bill or Bob doing a chair without a shirt on, and you can do one. Never found one. He said, you will get two home groups, and you will do service and commitments within them home groups, because people get that mixed up, what commitment is and what service is here. A commitment is making tea in the meeting. The service that the book talks about is sitting down one-on-one with another alcoholic addict and taking them through the work. Can you find a chapter in our book called Working with Making Tea? No. Working with others. I live in 10, 11 and 12. Now, let me tell you about the inventory process. And as I said, I'm not here to slate anybody, but I heard the woman before me, right, talking about inventory. So let me tell you about inventory, right? Got a sponsor, he rings me up. He goes, I slept with a prostitute last night. I went, all right, where was the discussion there then? He said, no, I took it to God. I said, and what did God say? He said, it was a good idea. I said, I'll tell you what, right, you're sounding remarkably like God. Don't take it to God no more and ring me up and ask me. Because that book talks about discussion with others. In step 5, it talks about me, God and you. It don't talk about me and God. It talks about me, God and you. Because I have to run my thinking past the thinking of others. I have to. Because all of a sudden I can start sounding like God. So here's my thinking, right? I'm a few years in. Got a few quid. I'm going to retire to the south of France. Now, I've looked at this place. It's a wooden shack with a lot. It's got a beautiful balcony, right? And the mountains behind it. And at night time, the sun goes down behind the mountains. And there's an old rocking chair on the back, on the like veranda. And I said to my sponsor, I'm going to go and do that. It sounds fantastic, doesn't it? And he just, you know that smile they have? Right, you know what I mean? Oh, yeah. Well, I said, yeah. What's wrong with that? Did it sound nice? He says, so you're in a foreign country where there's no meetings, no one speaks a fucking word of English, right? And you've got two vineyards either side of you. Good luck with that. I ain't seen any of that. Right? And do you know what? My God ain't seen any of it either. My sponsor did, though. He pulled me up on it. Because I need to defer to the thinking of others. Not just about take everything to God. Right? Now, I get slow people that do that or don't. Look, the fact is there's too many opinions in here and too many people arguing about what their religious beliefs are or what their God is. I ain't here for that. I'm here to keep this simple. This is about me, you and God. Me, you and God. It's not about me being here. I had a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps. I didn't have a religious conversion of one. So it's not my place to stand here and tell you my beliefs. Step 11 is your step. And your step back and that, keep that personal and private to you. Right? Personal and private. Because I keep mine personal and private. I think it's quite arrogant, to be honest with you, to understand God, because that would make me God. I have a God of my misunderstanding. And the God of my misunderstanding does for me what I cannot do for myself. He keeps me clean and sober. As a direct result of doing this, I'm 3 years into a degree. In health and social care. Today I work in a police station and I sit in the interview room and it ain't me they're fucking interviewing. And I have to pinch myself. And I'm walking around the station with the coach to the fucking old bill shop, if you don't mind. And I'm still nearly 6 years in, think that someone's going to grab me on the back and go, oi, we got you. We know what you're doing. Right? I still get it to this day. Self-centred fear. I was going to break into that bit about ask my girlfriend how recovered I am there, but I forgot. I ain't doing that. My life as a direct result of doing this has absolutely been revolutionised. I've been rocketed into a fourth dimension. I'm happy, joyous and free. And do I sound like that fucking geezer earlier? Eh? That's what's on offer here. And get on this, right? I got up this morning, and this is the greatest gift I've been giving you. I got up this morning. This is what I heard when I got up this morning. Check this out. Nothing. This is what it used to be like, right? Shit, have I got any methadone anywhere? Fuck, I wonder where the tea's on. Shit, I owe tea 50 quid. I can't fucking go and see him. I know I go around the old man's house. I can't go around there. He's locked me out the fucking house. I know, I go down Boots. Shit, Boots is not open. It's fucking Sunday. When am I going to get a fucking tenner from? I know I go over to Patel's. I can't go to Patel's. I fucking owe him 15 quid. I might have a bit of gear in the fucking bin that I done last night. Shit, I did that at 2 o'clock this morning when I got up. Maybe I got a few Valium. I can't get a fucking... I ain't even got out of bed yet. Right? Now, I'm under no illusions here as well, right? When you come in here, you will get a bit of grace. And that voice in your head and debating society will stop. But don't believe the lie. Right? Don't believe the lie. The lie is that I don't have to do what them people with the big books do. I don't have to fly through the steps. I don't have to take inventory. I don't have to take stuff to God. I don't have to have a sponsor. I don't have to have commitments. And I don't need to do service. Sooner or later, that's how the lie will get me. And as I talked about behaviour, this is what this is about. I've had to have a revolutionary change, a psychic change. That means my behaviour has had to change. And I've been here a long while now, and I see what happens with people that have been around a while. And for those of you that have been around a while, hopefully you'll identify with this, right? So I'm thinking about attaching myself to her on Facebook, right? She's a bit of a salt, that newcomer. I'm going to give her my number. I can help you, love. Right? I'm buying a little bit of Moody Snout off the back of a lorry. I'm just easing that tax stuff out of the way that I don't really have to pay. There's a bit of clobber coming off of a boat. I'll just have that as well. And sooner or later, then people go. Spiritual life is not a theory. I have to live it. It's not always easy, especially when you've had the criminality I've had in my life. But for me, that behaviour, this is what happens with it, right? I think that stuff, and then I act out on it. The minute I act out on it, I'm filled with guilt, shame and remorse that I've acted out on that. And then I've become miserable as a result of that. And then my illness goes, go and get 2 and 2. Now you see how cunning, baffling and powerful that was. It didn't say to me sitting in the meeting, go and get 2 and 2. Because it knows I'm a bit past that. But what it says is, you should get her number. You should buy that. And you should do that and you should knock them. And not pay that thing. And tell them you weren't living there at that time. Behaviour is what takes people out the door here, right? It's okay saying, yeah, well, they didn't get the meetings, they didn't do that. It's their behaviour. I've seen it time after time after time with people. You know, I've stood here for a long time, right? Most people will tell you who know me, right? I don't make friends here. I don't, right? And the reason I don't make friends in here is because I don't fuck about with this. I've seen 32 people die in the last 6 years in these meetings. 32 of them because I've been counting them. And then people wonder why you're passionate. I'll tell you why I'm passionate. Because you try and speak to someone's mum who's burying their kid, and the mum's saying to you, why has he died? Why couldn't you help him? What was wrong with him? And tell me you don't get passionate about this. Here's another thing. 97% of the people that I've taken bullets from in here are either drinking, using, in prison, or dead now. That's the reality of it. 97% of them. Another 2%, well, have gone down other roads. It's the religious route, or it's the Buddhist route, or it's the spiritual retreat route, or I need to go to another fellowship and take it easy. You just don't understand. It's about feelings. My experience is simple, right? The people that do this stuff and keep it simple, they stay. The people who don't and complicate the hell out of it, they go. And I've seen it time after time after time. Now, if anybody's an alcoholic in here, or anybody who's an addict who don't think they're an alcoholic, I've got a story for you. Right? So I'm in the meeting, And I said to my sponsor, I found a way of drinking without actually drinking. And he went, oh yeah, how are you going to do that? Is that smile again? Oh yeah. I said, I'm going to drink non-alcoholic lager in the pub with my friends. And I will be all right. And he went, yeah, I said that, and I ended up pissed at me nut and fucked. I went, yeah, but I'm not like you. He said, come here, let me show you something. So he took me in a meeting. He said, see that chair? It will be here when you get back. I said, I'm not fucking going anywhere. He went, all right. 3 months later, I came into the meeting like that. And he was standing outside the meeting like this. He went, how's it going, all right? I said, no, where's that fucking chair? He said, it's in there waiting for you. So 6 months later, I'm standing outside the meeting. And one of my sponsees comes over to me and says, I found a way of drinking without actually drinking. And I went, oh yeah, how are you going to do that? He said, I'm going to drink non-alcoholic lager in a pub with my friends. I said, I did that and I ended up sticking needles in myself. And he went, but I'm not like you. I said, I fucking said that as well. Come here. See that chair? It will be here when you get back. He went, I ain't fucking going anywhere. Do you know what? By the grace of God, he did come back. Because I've seen a lot of done. And the point of this story is this. I was told when I got here, not to give you my advice or my opinion, because I'll kill you, but to give you my experience, as my sponsor gave me his experience from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's it. You know, CA don't have any opinions on outside issues. Me, I have fucking bundles. All right? So, by the way, I'm not standing here speaking for CA. For anybody that's new, you've absolutely struck gold. We are a proactive fellowship. We're not an inactive one. Stick with the people that are passionate and got purpose in their life. And stick with the people that the other people say, stay away from them, they're lunatics. Right? If you're an addict of my variety. And Bill Wilson in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous calls it this. The real addict. Seriously addict. Addict of our type. Chronic addict. Not my language. Bill Wilson's language. That's what I am. There ain't no messing around here. I know what I am. Drug addiction is simple. It's not about what I have, how many prison sentences I've had, and what I use. This is about what happens to me when I stop. Because over any given period of time, I get worse. Worse. Irritable, restless, discontent, bored, pissed off, ungrateful, and I just don't want to be here. That is without a drink or drug of me. And Bill Wilson talks about it in his story, and he says, trembling, I stepped from the hospital, a broken man. Fear sobered me for a bit, but then came that insidious insanity. So when did the insidious insanity happen? Not while he was drinking. It happened while he was sober. And I have to keep remembering that's what's going to happen to me. The day that I stop doing that is when that little voice tells me that lie. And this is my lie, because your lie will be different. If I only use gear Monday, Wednesday and Saturday, I won't get an habit. If I only smoke crack, I won't end up on the methadone. If I only puff one spliff a week, I'll be all right. That's the lie. I sit here irritable, restless and discontent long enough, I'm going to believe that lie, and once I believe that lie, I'm gone. I've already told you my story. I'm not somebody who has an off button. I was never somebody who said what's in it or no thanks. Ever. I have that allergic reaction from the minute I pick one up, I'm gone. And I will smash everybody around me. I don't have to do that today. I don't have to do that. I am a proud, grateful, recovered member of Cocaine Anonymous. And I mean proud. Absolutely. I'm going to finish on this. Bill Wilson wrote in this book and he said this. I may have seemed to lecture and I may have seemed to give an advice, and if that's so, I'm sorry, because I don't always care for people that lecture me. But what I've related here is based upon actual experience, and some of it's been painful. That's why I'm anxious that you understand and avoid these unnecessary difficulties. So to you out there who may soon be with us, we say good luck, God bless. Thanks for letting me speak.
Thank you, Richard. Okay, we're going to close with serenity prayer. We're going to have a quick short break again. Then we've got Dave M. from Coventry coming up to share with us at about 3:30. Is that right with you? Can't see you. Yeah, you cool with that? All right, fantastic. Rich, can you close out with the serenity prayer, please?